Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 30 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We'll change today's program around just a bit and start with our special guest. The nation's hog herd, as you probably already know, has been under attack by a deadly virus for more than a year. PEDV quickly kills baby pigs. It's had a dramatic impact on the number of hogs raised in the United States. Those of us who grew up on the farm probably would have called it a really, really bad case of the scours, but it's far worse. Earlier this week, I asked University of Illinois veterinarian Jim Lowe to teach us about the virus.
So let's talk a little bit about PED at kind of the base levels. So PED is porcine epidemic diarrhea virus. It's caused by a coronavirus. And so you've heard other coronaviruses in the news. So the MERS virus or the Middle Eastern virus, the SARS virus. There are a lot of other coronaviruses that infect people. There are coronaviruses and other coronaviruses that infect pigs. We call that transmissible gastroenteritis. And there's coronaviruses that infect basically every species. Cows get coronavirus, sheep get coronavirus, dogs get coronavirus. So coronaviruses are very common viruses. This particular virus, like the TGE or the transmissible gastroenteritis virus, affects part of the small intestine. So the small intestine has a bunch of little fingers in it. Those fingers are responsible for absorbing nutrients. This virus infects the cells around or that line those fingers, and those cells die, which means that the pig can't absorb nutrients anymore. So the diarrhea is actually because they can't absorb what they take in, and so it passes straight through without being digested and absorbed. It means they also can't absorb water, and they actually suffer from dehydration more than they suffer from actually malnutrition. So what's interesting about most of these viruses and most diarrhea viruses, and so the most common killer of human infants is actually rotavirus in third world countries, and so viruses are very, very common. PED affects baby pigs, so neonatal pigs, and particularly those pigs under a week of age. And we don't know why. Part of it is the theory is, right, they're just more susceptible, they don't have as many reserves, but they may also be just, actually the virus may be more effective in growing in them. But pigs in less than a week of age have really severe damage to their intestine. Hence, they can't resorb nutrients. More importantly, they can't resorb water. And basically, for pigs less than a week of age, the virus is effectively 100% fatal.
What do we know about its transmission?
So we always think about how does viruses move, how do disease move. In this case, it's what we would refer to as oral fecal. So contaminated manure, fecal material, is the primary route of transmission. So anything that could have manure on it can basically have PED on it. So any way anything coming out of the farm can move. So we've done a study and documented that trucks are really a big way that we can transmit disease. We published that data in EID, Emerging Infectious Diseases, really from the beginning of the outbreak, that it appears that animals, live haul trucks moving pigs between farms are a big risk. We know that many, many other things can be contaminated. There's been work done that it'll survive in manure for weeks. One of the original studies was it was there for 3 weeks, and that's because they quit testing it 3 weeks. The study was designed to go 3 weeks, and they could still find virus at 3 weeks. There's certainly been some suggestions that feed contaminated with manure can be a problem. There's some evidence, fairly strong evidence of that, that if we get some cross-contamination with manure and feed, that it moves that way. Supplies moving in and out, if a boar stud or a source of the semen gets infected with PED, it can be on the outside of the bottles. So it's not in the semen itself, but there's so much virus that it's on the outside of the bottles and it moves around. One thing that's exceptionally interesting about this, so compared to TGE, a gram or a milliliter, a cc, so just a little bit of virus contains about a million infectious doses of PED. So the stuff moves around very, very easily. It survives very well in the cold and without sunlight. And so You know, this virus was introduced last April. We had some outbreaks relatively there in May and June. But by July, it had kind of quieted down. And then when it got cold again in October, November, December, it started to ramp back up, as you exactly would expect with the coronavirus. So we got back in. It's been better here. Here we are the 1st of June, basically, and it's gotten better. But, you know, nothing like sunlight and a little warmth to get rid of.
Do we know how it developed and where it came from?
So we know the virus is genetically similar, very, very genetically similar to a virus that was in China. So the original PED was identified in Europe. That's a genetically distinct virus. That was in the 70s. It's basically gone from Europe today. And there's a variant circulating in China today. In fact, all over, there's PED all over in Asia. But there's a variant from China that was placed in GenBank, which is the repository of genetic information about viruses. And the U.S. virus matches up within about a 0.5% or something. So we're confident the virus came from China. We have no idea how it got here.
How much damage has it done?
Well, if you look at the USDA numbers, there's some projections that we're going to be down about 10% of the pigs. Those numbers probably haven't fully panned out in that we've had more pigs coming to market than that, so it's really hard to get a full estimate on where we're at. Individual farms that are affected basically are going to lose at least 4 weeks of wean of baby pigs. So if they're having pigs born every week, basically there are 4 weeks of pigs that they're going to lose, and there's nothing we can do to stem the tide. If we do some intentional exposure, get the herd infected very quickly, we can keep that loss in the individual herd to about 4 weeks, 5 or 6 on the worst end of that. So that's just 10% of the production for the year.
Can a herd over time become tolerant?
So the herd develops immunity. It's not great immunity. But they do develop immunity, and the baby pigs will quit dying. So mom builds an immune response. Mom secretes that antibody in those cells in her milk, in her colostrum primarily, and then also IgE in her milk. And so the pigs that are born about 2 weeks after the initial outbreak survive at a fairly normal rate. Those pigs, even post-weaning, will do fine when they go to market. So it's how quickly you can make sure every mom gets exposed. The adults are not particularly affected. They have a little mild diarrhea, much like viruses in people. No big deal in humans. You feel bad for a couple of days and you get over it. So the adults are not affected. And so how do we get mom infected so mom can build an immune response and then mom can clear, produce enough antibodies so that those piglets aren't infected?
Does that mean it will run its course in the U.S. herd at some point?
Well, we would like to think that. However, unfortunately, it does not appear that the immunity is particularly long-lasting. So it appears that within 4 to 6 months after the initial infection, immunity in the herd starts to wane, and these herds appear to be susceptible again. So we don't think, if you look at some estimates that are out there, we don't believe that the outbreaks next fall will be as bad as they were this fall, maybe half as bad or a quarter as bad. So 2.5 to 5% of the pigs, if you believe the 10% estimate this year. But this is a disease that's here to stay, and it'll get better over time, but it's not going to go away.
How much work is being done to develop a vaccination?
Yeah, so there's a lot of work going on in vaccines. And so I think what's important to remember is that a year ago, we had no diagnostic capability. We couldn't even diagnose the disease in the U.S. And so within about 45 days, we had really quite good diagnostic capabilities. They continue to improve those. Vaccine research started fairly quickly. One of the challenges is you can't grow this virus very easily in cell culture, which is how we grow viruses. So we've had to learn how to grow the virus, and there's a lot of work being done on that. They still haven't perfected that at a commercial scale. There are some biotech vaccines being made. So we're making a vectored vaccine where you insert part of the PED gene into another virus, grow that up to produce the protein. That's being done. It appears that some of those vaccines are of a limited benefit in animals that have already been exposed, but we cannot produce a very good immune response in animals that have never seen the virus before. So yes, we would hope that we could have a vaccine, but if you look at our track record for coronavirus vaccines in general across all the species, it's pretty poor.
That's Dr. Jim Lowe, a clinical veterinarian right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I had a discussion with him earlier in the week about the epidemic, porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, commonly known as PEDV. On the phone lines with us during this edition of Commodity Week for the 30th day of May are Mike Zuzlow, Aaron Curtis, and Kurt Kimmel. And Kurt, I'd like to begin with you and stay in the swine area because bean meal prices have skyrocketed and for the second week in a row finished above $500. It will put lean hogs and hog producers under some pressure to try to figure out how to feed those animals.
Well, thus far, pork producers are hanging in there. The value of the pork in general has remained relatively strong. We've seen profit margins still hanging in there, even with the higher meal values. We're talking 91, 92 cent cash hogs. So that's been offset somewhat. What the fear would be if meal continues to remain strong and the pork complex sees a little bit more of a correction to the downside. But when you see the damage this virus has done in through here, as much as, you know, 5 to 10%, and when you look at slaughter rates coming in 4 to 5% down, this virus is going to really start hitting home here as those hogs during the winter won't be here as we move through the summer demand time window. So we look for pork prices to remain firm and profitability in the complex. A lot of popularity in the spreading of buying meal, selling oil here throughout the winter and spring time.
And Mike Suslow, if we could stay in the livestock sector for just a bit longer, but turn your attention to the cattle market. Feeder cattle at $197 and a nickel as they finished the week. They were up $4.20. They gapped higher for the month, too, up $9.57.5. $200 in the offing there?
Yeah, I think you're getting there, Todd. I think you're going to have to get there given the supplies that we're looking at and given that this summer is looking like a very good grilling season summer. You know, this is one of the things that the trade's talking a lot about, El Nino and the grain markets, and how that's probably negative the grain markets because of the growing conditions, but it also would suggest that we're going to have a nice summer to be able to grill out. And I think this is where, to dovetail into what Kurt said about the pork prices, you've got the choice retail the choice cutout box beef and the select only about $10 apart at this point. And so you're getting to a level now where the beef prices are going to start supporting the pork market on the retail side of the equation, and you're probably going to start to see that relatively soon as we get close to the July 4th seasonal buying time period when it comes to the wholesale side of the equation and the packer demand. So one of the things I'll be really looking forward to in the next couple weeks is to see if pork takes out the biggest feature space by most of the grocery stores, and if it does, then I think your hog prices can follow the live cattle prices higher and the feeder cattle prices higher.
Aaron Curtis at Midco, let's turn our attention to the grains and the oil seeds. Tell me about basis levels in the Bloomington Normal area.
Well, throughout Illinois, really, basis continues to firm up, at least on the corn side. Processor basis been a little firmer this week. For the most part, you know, really two factors, the, you know, farmers in the field, of course, attentions on other things, and just that lack of cash movement here. Demand continues to kind of churn along here. The farmer just doesn't have a lot of interest. The 60-cent drop in nearby futures obviously has something to do with that, but also the fact that typically this is a time for corn basis to improve a little bit as the farmer trucks kind of move on to other things and the producers out in the field a little bit. So we are seeing, you know, some of the highest basis values, you know, we've really seen all year on the corn side. Soybean side, a little flatter, a little, for the most part, eastern side of Illinois, firming up a little bit. Indiana basis continues to be very firm. But in the central part of the state here, bean basis, for the most part, has been pretty flat for the last few days, Todd.
Now, I'd like to poll all of you, and we'll stay with you, Aaron, first. On corn, are you feeling like we're building a bottom area here? We have much more to go down. Or is it time to turn this market higher?
Well, short term, I'm looking for a little bit of a bounce here. You know, we're approaching oversold conditions. Like I mentioned, we've dropped pretty sharply here over the last 3 weeks. So I think we got a little bit of a bounce. I think the rallies are going to be somewhat short-lived unless we have some adverse weather. But looking for more of a technical bounce here, see if we can get a little room for improvement here to maybe catch up on some old crop sales, hopefully.
And Mike Zuzalo?
Yeah, I think Aaron had a real big point about the basis right now for corn, and this is where I think you need to get I'm going to certainly recommend for the clients and subscribers at this point, Todd, to get 3 months worth of your feed needs covered by mid-June in the corn, because as Aaron said, Decatur basis is the best since September of last year, but the flat price is 45 cents less than the peak last month. And, you know, given that the carryover level in January was 1.6 billion on old crop, and now we're down to 1.1 billion, I think this is a really good buying opportunity for the feed hedger, especially given that I think we are pulling some premium out of the market in anticipation of perfect El Nino growing conditions, and I think we're a long way away from that.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Well, we've done some major technical damage this week. I feel we're oversold. The momentum indicators are showing some signs of divergence. D's 457.5 suggests maybe we could test 450 area, but as oversold as is, I'd be in the camp of seeing some recovery in through here. For those who did take advantage of cash sales or hedges at some higher levels, this break has given guys opportunities to come in and maybe take a hard look at these September call options to replace ownership on paper. Here you come in $5 call for 10 cents, whatever fits your needs in through there. And also, it's been said in the past, maybe some courage calls to give you some courage to be a seller on some strength here on some weather concerns as we get more in the growing season.
Hey, Mike, do you think we have a trend line yield for corn in the ground at this time?
We maybe will be able to get there with good weather from here. I don't think we're there yet, and that's anecdotal evidence from the clients that I've talked to over the last couple weeks, Todd. Some people are very happy, but one of the newer clients I have in Iowa called me today, and he had heard about the potential for buying feed needs, and he said, put me down for that because my stand is nothing close to what it is right now. And he's in west central Iowa. And so I think that the trade, though, is really saying 165 is easy at this point because of the weather forecast. So I do think, a lot like last year, there's going to be a point in time here where there's a disconnect, where the weather kind of shapes the future a little bit better in terms of rally potential, and the trade won't be ready for it. And I think a lot of that goes back to the hard red wheat and whether the crop is there and whether the soft red wheat, the crop is there. In other words, we can, I think, go back above $5 D's corn with a weather scare. I think we could go above the 517 high if we have wheat leading it to the upside.
Hey, Aaron, as part of the trade, does Midco believe 165 is easy?
Well, I don't know about easy, but I think it's maintainable still at this point. I mean, a lot of producers, at least in Illinois, talking about, you know, some of the best planting conditions they've had, some of the best stands they've had in a long time. Now, you know, we need some rain throughout some parts of Illinois here to kind of get beans up and going here. It looks like we're going to have quite a few chances next week in some pretty dry dirt again through the central part of the state anyway, at least on top. But I still think the potential right now today on May 30th is still potential to meet some of those goals the USDA has put on the balance sheet at this point.
And Kurt Kimmel, your quick look at corn and yields.
Well, I think we're more in, you know, it's 163 area, 164, but we'll have to get more, you know, down the road here. Next week's crop conditions reports for the good to excellent category for corn is expected to come out strong, 70% good to excellent right out of the chute here. So most areas were off to a good start, not everywhere, but I think expectations are we're in line mid 160, then go from there.
Okay, we're talking, of course, here on Commodity Week with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Aaron Curtis is with us, too. He's in Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. And Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You can always find us again, if you'd like, on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Agricultural Programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. Now, here's Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with a weekend update of the weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for May in Illinois was 63.2 degrees and 0.5 degrees above average. This was the first warmer-than-average month for Illinois since October of last year. May was a little short on precipitation. The statewide average amount was 3.3 inches. That's 1.3 inches below average. The wettest areas in the state were in that northeast corner where the amounts were 1 to 2 inches above average. It was a little drier in western Illinois between Interstates 72 and 74, which saw less than 2 inches of rain for the month. This area is now labeled abnormally dry by the U.S. Drought Monitor. The National Weather Service forecast indicated warm weekend followed by some cooling by midweek. On Saturday, highs will be in the low to mid-80s. Overnight lows on Sunday in the low to mid-60s, warming up to the mid-80s by the afternoon. Both Monday and Tuesday will be warm with highs in the low to mid-80s. Wednesday and Thursday will be slightly cooler with highs in the 70s in the north and in the 80s in the south. Higher humidity levels will follow these warmer temperatures with dew points readings in the mid to upper 60s for the week. There are chances for rain on Sunday through Wednesday of the amount of 30 to 50%.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, for his weekly update of the weather forecast. Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for the week. On the weekly trade, the overnight and day trade, July corn for the week had a high at $4.75, its low at $4.65. Settlement price there at $4.65¾ was down 12¼ cents on the week. On the month, the close was 53¼ cents lower than it was in the month of April. December corn, 57½ cents lower for the week, down 17¾. The monthly trade down 51¾ in December corn. Soybeans had a high this week of 15.15½, a low at 14.82¾. The settlement price there at $14.93¼, down 22¼ cents for the week, 19½ cents lower on the month. November beans, $12.33¾, the weekly trade down Friday to Friday, 32 cents, 13 cents lower in the November beans or new crop for the month. And July bean meal, $500.20 was the settlement price. That was up $6.50 from last Friday. July bean oil at $38.50 was down $3.61. Soft red winter wheat July contract gapped lower for the month. It finished down 92 cents, $6.29½ was the settlement price. The weekly trade there was down 23. The hard red July at 7.06 finished 19½ cents lower. It also posted a monthly outside down for both the soft red and the hard red, by the way. The hard red finished 62 cents lower than it did in April. August feeder cattle at $197 and a nickel were up $4.20. They gapped higher for the month, up $9.57½ in May. August live cattle at $138.60, a weekly trade $1.47½ higher, and on the monthly charts up $2.52½. Lean hogs in the July at $120.47½ on the settlement price, down $3.25 from the previous Friday, and down $1.92½ for the month of May. This is the May 30 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's continue our conversation and take up the soybean market. Can you give me an outlook for basis levels over the next month, please, Aaron Curtis?
I think that's somewhat of a shot in the dark at this point. Like I mentioned, basis levels east of us pretty firm and up to some pretty good levels. And you get west of us out in Iowa, things lagging continue. So Decatur is kind of in the middle of that for the most part, you know, still finding ways to source beans outside of Illinois at this point. That's kind of keeping basis somewhat muted. So I think it's going to be hard to predict a little bit about what basis is going to do here. You know, from the processor side, crush margins continue to be good. The processor, or excuse me, producer stocks continue to be dwindling here a little bit. So I think we could be set up for some pretty volatile bean basis here. Moving forward, and today I could be up or down, Todd. Sorry for kind of the chicken out answer, but I think that's the reality of the situation moving forward. It's going to be a lot of everything, I think.
You know, Kurt, as we looked at the export sales from this morning, it showed a relatively strong sale continuing for soybeans. And then you've got meal that's strong both in price at the port and in the interior. It's really a battle at this time, isn't it?
Well, yeah, especially what little beans are left. It's hard to shake loose. And I guess that's why we've got imports up over 90 million, up to 90 million bushels here to satisfy the need. You know, some say is we've got to import beans to export beans. So it's old crop beans are going to be relatively tight, and it's going to keep the old crop in a position here to still see some fireworks here as we go late into the marketing season.
And given all of this, things are still lower on the week, down 19.5 cents in the old crop. November beans were down 13 cents, Mike Zuzulo. Is there an uptrend yet to come in this marketplace?
There was last year at this time, and I guess I would attribute the break this week, Todd, to the catch-up in the planting conditions and the fact that beans could not stand up against the lower wheat and lower corn. Meal did, but beans could not. I don't think that will last very long. One of the biggest numbers that I looked at this week was the stocks of grain report that the AMS puts out every Tuesday normally. But just in this past week, the grand total stocks of beans went down 14% just in 1 week. And now, as of this week compared to a year ago in mid to late May, we're down 17% compared to last year, and with about 4.9 million bushels in the hands or in the stocks of grain at major terminal elevator sites. And so this is where what Aaron's point goes back to is that, yeah, you could probably see the basis, you know, flatten out if the futures market would go higher like we did last year at this time. But golly, I got to think that if we go lower in the futures market, the basis is going to try and offset almost all of that unless we're seeing real serious cancellations at this point. We're only at 38. We're only on week 38 of the export marketing year, and our accumulated shipments are already 98% of USDA's objective, and that's a big, big number.
Well, with that, we'll need to wrap it up. Do you have a final word, Mike, for our listeners?
Watching those crop conditions and very poor and poor in the wheat as we get ready to harvest.
And Aaron Curtis.
Yeah, I think I'd look for a little bit of a technical bounce here as we head into the new month and kind of let that dictate how you finish up old crop sales at this point.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Still a lot of market in front of us. There's still a lot of opportunity for both the bull and the bear.
All right. Thanks so much to Aaron Curtis. He's with Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel, who you just heard, is with Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. And Mike Zuzula, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Our special guest today was Jim Lowe, clinical veterinarian here at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to hear that interview about PEDV again, you can always do that on our website. Actually, you can watch it. It's posted there as a YouTube video. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great afternoon and a fantastic weekend. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.